the weekend, and that means new movies are out, which means only one thing. Welcome to John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
I'm very excited about this. This will be fun. Or should I not be excited about it?
I would love it if you would be excited about it. At least you'd be excited about something. So. And now, John Serba Hates Your Favorite Movie.
Hey, this is John Serba, film critic for MLive.com and Advance Publications. I'm here with Eric Holtgren, as always. And he does not, but I probably hate your favorite movie. This is my podcast. We're going to... scheduling difficulties have derailed us from talking about Tarzan, the latest Tarzan feature, which I'm hearing is not as... You know, I didn't have any expectations for it, frankly, but I don't think anybody has any expectations for it. And
which is a good way to start
just,
the weekend.
It just smells like a flop, yeah. Frankly. It really does. But I will get into the BFG, which is the new Steven Spielberg children's movie, and we'll talk about one of the most fascinating documentaries I've seen in a long time.
Oh, you saw it?
Called Tickled.
Nice.
If anybody has read anything about this, it's... It's not really the film, it's the story itself, but we'll get into that here in a minute. Let's start off with, I don't know what I'm going to hate this week, Eric. I really don't.
Well, we should probably figure that out in the next 45 minutes, since that's the title of the podcast.
All right, let's start with Tickled, then.
All right.
this really ultra-fascinating documentary. It's essentially about a New Zealand... journalist who's his name's David Ferrier, and he's got some fame for being the guy who does all the oddball stories, and so people know who he is in New Zealand, and perhaps to some degree internationally, but the story starts, he found out about this quote-unquote competitive tickling league, and he found some videos online of guys who are tied down, and other guys like gang, you know, there's four other guys, one on the pits, one on the tummy area, and one on each foot, tickling, and it's like this endurance tickling thing, and so he's like, oh, this looks like an interesting story, so he sends out an email, to this organization, and the reply was immediately a bunch of, homophobic bullying directed at him, you know, like, don't look into this, they deploy the F word and everything, and so he went, this makes me want to look even deeper into it, and it is one hell of a rabbit hole. It really is.
And before you even get into that, what I find interesting is you told me that this is what we were doing this week, and so I've been walking around all weekend kind of talking about, I can't wait to hear what he says about this thing, and the visceral reaction that this is a thing that exists has been fascinating to me. And I was saying this weekend that we live in a society where we are aware that people dress up like mascots and have sex parties.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that there's competitive tickling still can get this crazy visceral reaction.
Well, yeah. And, to be honest, Ferrier didn't know what exactly it was. Is it a sport? Is it a fetish? Definitely the latter is what he finds out. And the rabbit hole he goes down to leads not only to this, like, okay, well, there's a subculture for everything, isn't there? But it also leads to this great story about, you know, felonious fraud. Like, this is not at all what you think is going to happen. And I'm a little worried to talk too much about it, because the more the film goes on and the more it reveals, the more like jaw dropping it gets. Just when you think, oh, well, it's hit a peak, and you look at your watch and you realize we're only halfway through this movie. And he's discovered a lot of stuff. He still has more things to uncover. But it essentially, it's a story about how someone with a lot of money and a lot of, for lack of a better word, someone with a lot of money and brass balls can do amazing things to bully people, to try to get his way, and to indulge his own, you know, and I don't want to judge anybody for whatever makes them excited at all, but like, but to kind of indulge his own fantasies. And this guy goes to this person that Ferrier finds out about goes to extreme lengths to maintain his tickling empire.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and this is
Without even seeing a, I haven't watched it, I've invoked the John Serbo laws of movies with this. Watched and consumed nothing about this, but yeah. I can picture in my mind what this human being looks like without you going one step further. I just know what he looks like. In the same way that you know what a Bond villain looks like, I know exactly what this guy looks like.
And by the way, the theory is known as purity of experience, Eric. Purity of experience.
I prefer the John Serba theory, actually.
Well, that's...
It feels
that's,
like a jazz trio, and I think that fits you.
But no one cares about me. They care about their experience in the film.
Fair enough, but purity of experience. But please do not judge my maxims. This is one of my maxims.
I'm flattered by that. Purity of experience, by the way, for those of you who don't know, it is...
What was the word from last week, by the way?
Huh?
Detouement. That was right.
Denouement?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's my English lit degree.
Yes. Well, because I'm trying to put words of the week, and that was the one
sure,
from last week.
Sure. Denouement. Falling action.
I'll put purity falling of experience action. In.
Purity of experience is my own philosophy. I don't know if anybody else has a similar philosophy or has coined a similar phrase, but this is my thing. And it started a few years ago when Django Unchained, the marketing, you know, it started rolling out for this movie, I believe, 7 months ahead of its release.
It was a long time.
Yeah, and which is fairly normal for a movie nowadays. But and I swore to myself I would not, I would expose myself to as little pre-movie hype as possible. No trailers, don't read articles, you know, try to turn away when you walk by the poster in the movie theater. just so you don't even have a single image of the movie spoiled, and in that way it will surprise you, you know. And it's just me being reactionary, because I think at that point I forget if it was the, I think it was the first Amazing Spider-Man movie. At one point it's a 2-hour film, and someone had put together all the pre-release footage from trailers and TV spots and all this stuff, and it added up to 30 minutes almost, you know. So you're a quarter of the movie has already been, people have seen maybe not even realizing it, they've seen a quarter of a movie before it's even in theaters. So that's my purity of experience. And yes, there were times during that 7-month period when the trailer started coming up in the theater and I got up and walked out, and
wow,
I turned my face away and I covered my ears. I didn't, like, you know, curl up on the floor in a fetal ball with my fingers in my ears going blah 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 blah, trying, but it came pretty close. But yeah, purity of experience.
All right,
do it. It makes your life better.
So I'm doing that currently with tickle.com or whatever this documentary is called.
Yeah, except I've already told you fairly enough about
well,
it.
Well, I have to run this, so there's no place I can go. But visually, I've consumed nothing.
Do it with Tarzan, since we're not going to talk about that. Purity of experience.
Okay.
Tarzan. The Legend of Tarzan.
Yes.
Lord of the Ape Men Jungle People.
Colon.
Okay.
All right.
I used to watch the Tarzan cartoon as a kid. Did you ever watch that?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. That 70s cartoon.
I was more George of the Jungle fan, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, Tarzan. Well, George of the Jungle was the comedy version of Tarzan.
I enjoy funnier things better, I guess. than the realism of Tarzan the cartoon.
Well, I like monkeys, so Cheetah. Right. I've always been a fan of Cheetah. In fact, is Cheetah in this movie? I need to find out.
I'm currently enveloped in the purity of experience, so I do not know
exactly. I'll find out in 9 hours. I'm going to find out that whether Cheetah is in this movie. I know Jane is in it. I know Jane.
Right? Yeah,
Jane. Tickled, go see it. It's been in limited release in some bigger markets. It's starting to widen. It's hitting here in Grand Rapids, July 1st. I'm sure it's...
Ooh, this weekend we can get tickled?
Yes.
You can
get tickled. Yeah. You know, and one of the interesting things about it for us Michiganders is all of a sudden this story led David Ferrier to Muskegon, Michigan, where there is a tickling cell. I am not joking. They use that phrase, tickling cell.
I love your choice of lexicon there. That's interesting.
So I was like, oh, wow, that's like 40 minutes away. People are... Are
you going to turn this into investigative journalism?
Go
finish your experience?
I don't want to know any more about this than I already do. It's actually not that big. Suffice to say that one of the tangents that Ferrier goes into is like exploring the phenomenon. And, you know, it's essentially tickling. It's kind of an S&M bondage thing, but just lighter.
Sure.
You know, instead of whips and chains, it's literally feathers and like
it's fat,
electric toothbrushes.
It's fat-free S&M, right? Like you've taken all the sugar and fats out of it and lightened it up.
For sure. It's kind of fun. One of the funnier things in this is like watching, you know, a grown man who obviously lifts a lot of weights and chows a lot of protein powder, strapped down and giggling his head off until his face turns beet red. I mean, there's innate comedy in that. But yeah, Tickled, a really remarkable documentary and one that David Ferrier pursued at some risk because there was, as he dug into this, he had numerous legal threats thrown at him. And to the point where like he had producers investing in his project and he did get some Kickstarter money to follow on this, of course, which like most any lower level documentary needs right now.
Right.
But his producers were getting gun shy because of the legal threats he was facing from the depths of his investigation.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So go fit. I mean, it, you know, and that's where the movie kind of gets into, you know, that conversation that a lot of people have been having lately because of the People versus O.J. Simpson was on FX and then the big 30 for 30 documentary series was kind of about one of the aspects of that was kind of about how someone with really deep pockets can manipulate the legal system.
Sure.
And that's the threat that's like looming over this guy who's just a journalist trying to uncover some truth that some people don't want uncovered. So absolutely fascinating movie and like I said, one that has a lot of surprises the more corners it turns. And it's not one of those one of the things that I think kind of derails a lot of documentaries is talking head syndrome, and there isn't a lot of this is a fair amount of like, oh my gosh, this guy and his cameraman and his co-director and his producer are like literally doing stakeouts in their cars hoping to get you know people involved in the tickling empire on camera. so just a little nugget of Roger and me type pursuit in this as well. So
or that crazy scene from This Film Is Not Yet Rated, right, where they're trying to get the people from the MPAA on camera.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, really a good comparison point. Definitely. I'm glad you brought up that movie. This movie has not been rated, which is pretty fascinating.
Super fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Especially them, being heterosexual and homosexual sex scenes and going one is NC-17, one is R.
Again, we're getting a little bit off topic, but I will say very quickly, my favorite part of the documentary is when they talk to Trey Parker.
Yeah.
About the project they do before they're with Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And after they're with Warner Brothers, right? And just how difficult it was before and how it was totally seamless to do crazy stuff.
Sure.
Because you're Warner Brothers.
Yeah, sure.
So
I'm sure David Ferrier didn't have any problem getting tickled on the big screen because 50 Shades Grey went off.
Right.
No problem.
Yeah. Which is also S&M fat free, by the way.
Exactly. So I guess it's time. We're gonna get into this sooner rather than later.
And now, your Independence Day edition of John Zerba hates your favorite movie.
Okay. If the BFG is your favorite movie, I kinda hate your favorite movie. I don't really hate it, but geez, this movie is boring. It's very boring. And I,
wow.
It's one where the rep, and I'm not naming the rep who puts on early screenings or helps organize early screenings, and Eric, you know her. But
I do.
She was like, I took a nap during this movie. It's one of those classic cases of
I brought this in for you because you said it was boring. Like, he's got a cover story on Wired.
It's Steven Spielberg. Here it is. Steven Spielberg, World of Wonder. He has made some of the greatest kids movies ever. Now he's unleashing his inner child with the BFG. You know, I am not going to say he doesn't manufacture wonder in this movie. Because there's a couple of scenes in it where you go, wow. A real wow. This isn't a 1 or 1.5 star movie. It's a 2.5 star movie for me. I'm really, you know, but the extremes were great in this. There are moments where you're going, oh my gosh, I can't believe what Spielberg can do. You know, I mean, he was the guy who smashed barriers with Jurassic Park.
Sure.
You know, absolutely smashed barriers. And from a technological standpoint. But the point that I make is like, what did he create with Jurassic Park? I'm posing this question to you. What did he create?
Well, I mean, an entire genre of sci-fi. I mean, like, I don't think in the way that you think. So I guess for me, it was this, for me, non-critic standpoint, it was this colliding of two genres into one, right? Because before that movie or book, right, there was dinosaurs over here.
Yeah.
And sci-fi over here.
Yeah.
And then they put them all together, and then you had this total blockbuster insanity.
Okay, so what's at the core of a dinosaur movie?
Aside from the dinosaurs?
Yeah. Fear.
Yes, okay, yeah.
Fear. You will about the technical achievement of Jurassic Park, which is just phenomenal. I saw this movie a couple years ago when they re-released it on IMAX, and it still looks great. How many times have you watched a movie from 20 years ago and you go, well, I can see how special effects technology has progressed.
Yes.
And I watched Jurassic Park, and it looked great. And part of it was, I think some of it is sleight of hand to a degree where you are too clenched up. You are too wrapped up in the suspense of the situation and the story and dinosaurs chasing kids. The core fear of that you're not going to notice if there are any seams in this. And so getting back to the BFG, he creates some wondrous stuff, but there's nothing at stake here. You know, it's a lot of whimsy, and I didn't feel any tension or suspense really. The basic story, it's a Roald Dahl book. He's a guy who wrote James and the Giant Peach. That's his biggest one. The BFG is another kind of favorite book of his, grade schooler age book. And it's essentially about she's little girl, 10 years old or so. Her name's Sophie. She spots a giant walking around. Sophie is an orphan, and she has insomnia. And you get that, like, empathetic feeling because it's a little girl, and she shouldn't feel these things. And she meets this giant, and now he feels his cover is blown. He snatches her up and brings her to giant country because he doesn't want her to tell anybody that giants exist in this reality. And she learns that the giant is friendly, BFG, big friendly giant. She calls him BFG. And he is actually the runt of all the giants. The other giants pick on him, and he's an outcast because he doesn't eat human beings. You know, he prefers to eat snozcumbers, which are big.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, they're big, smelly, gross vegetables. But think about the sacrifice. You know, human beings are, I don't know, giants think they're delicious, but he chooses not to eat them to be a vegetarian, apparently. So, I mean, how How modern is that? are Snazcumbers vegan? Is he a vegan? I mean, is he a purely... Is he... What kind of oil is he using
when he cooks?
When he fries up his Snazcumbers in the frying pan. But anyway, he... So, but that's the crux of it, because you know this is a 2-hour movie in which, it feels like not much happens. The other giants show up. The little girl has to hide, and that just doesn't feel like enough happening, you know. And we really don't. I think the big problem here is, when kids read the book, what do you do when you read a book? It's not a picture book, so you are creating the images in your own head. And I think having those images created for you in this instance is a detriment to the story, because all of a sudden it's all there in front of you, and what's left? You know, some empathy for the characters, but that's about it. You know, there isn't a whole lot of depth here, and so it's a lot of Spielberg kind of showing off. There's really a marvelous sequence. One of the things that the BFG does is what he does when he wanders the human world is he has a big horn and he honks, well, quietly honks dreams out of them and delivers them to children and people and whatever. And so there's a sequence where he takes Sophie to this lake, and it's like this just amazing, like, it looks like it's made out of the Aurora Borealis, you know, so it has that kind of shimmering,
sure,
colorful quality to it, and they jump in, and it's actually an upside-down world, you know, you flip over, and there's a big tree, and the dreams are depicted as these kind of like firefly buzzing balls of light of different color, and the gold ones are the rare ones, and the red ones are nightmares, and he chases them around. It's this really kind of wonderful thing, but I don't know what it means. I don't know if it feels like the best children's stories of this type are allegorical at times. And, you know, The Jungle Book was like a big, you know, to pull a recent children's book on big screen success, it felt like there is some political stuff happening,
right,
there that, you know, if you're not a child scooped up in the idea of talking apes,
cats and apes and bears
and all that, the adults can sit there and go, this is evocative of things I'm aware of in our reality, in our political reality. And I thought really hard. I saw this movie a week ago, and I'm thinking, I'm like, what does it all mean? And it's just this, I think, you know, whimsy for its own sake can be really wonderful, but this just kind of goes nowhere. And this is when I get out the word that applies here. And I don't know if anyone's ever used this word before. And part of the... One of the whimsical elements of this story is that the giant has this kind of mangled, you know, malapropisms, you know, fizz whizzler and rumpus bumpus and whatever, you know, he has all these goofy words. And my word for this movie, the characters in this movie just are diddle farting the entire time. There's just like, what are they doing? Why are they doing it? I don't know. And this isn't the first time I've deployed the diddle fart word, which if you follow me on Twitter, I did a poll asking people if they wanted me to use diddle fart, and it's overwhelmingly yes, in like 70-some percent of the 20 people who voted.
Sure, yes.
But, you know, I had previously deployed this in one of the Hobbit movies where it's just like, and the Hobbit movies are notorious for these tangents where, you know, a 300-page book became 9 or 10 hours of movie. And what are you going to... There's going to be padding. There's going to be a bunch of hobbits doing hobbity nonsense. They're diddle farting around. And I would not use diddle farting in the context of a movie about competitive tickling. It just doesn't seem right.
Yes.
So
feels like there's a different...
I'm drawing that line right there. So there's a lot of diddle farting in it just didn't seem like there was a whole lot of consequence to what was happening in the BFG. interestingly, I read an interview with Spielberg recently where it pointed out that this is Spielberg's first ever use of a fart joke in a movie. Not necessarily. I think the better filmmakers avoid fart jokes for the most part. I think the Hobbits farted, like literally farted, didn't they? Didn't the Hobbits fart in those Hobbit movies? I think they
probably
did.
Probably. Sure.
And
the only way you make that book 9 hours long is if you add some farting.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. One of the more subversive elements of the BFG, for anybody who likes to see kind of figures of noble stature reduced to base elements of humanity, you do get to see the Queen of England fart, and her corgis. And her corgis, they fart like crazy in this movie. So just so you know, maybe that's a draw. Maybe that's your draw. You want to see them fart?
Sure.
Like crazy.
I feel like that should have been spoiler alert. I don't know.
it's been talked about a lot already. The BFG is he drinks this fizzy beverage. The bubbles go down instead of up, and therefore, when you pass the gas from it, you don't burp it. It comes out the other end.
Got it.
So. Queen of England drinks this stuff, and that's what happens.
All right, the dogs drink it as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's you know, he shares. He shares. He doesn't discriminate.
Fair enough.
Apparently, you know, I just wish, you know, Ruby Barnhill plays Sophie, and she seems really game. I wish there was more to it. She seems like she has pretty good on-screen charisma. It's worth noting that Mark Rylance plays the BFG. Mark Rylance, did you see Bridge of Spies?
I did.
He's the spy in that movie.
Oh,
who's
okay.
Incarcerated. You know, would it help is his line from that movie. He won an Oscar for that role. Spielberg brings him back to this, and it's that typical kind of movie magic. Motion capture, rotoscoping, whatever you want to call it, where you know he kind of acts the things out, and they paint him over in CGI, and it really is one of the more marvelous examples of this style of technology, where you can really see how many times do you see this, and you're kind of wowed by. Oh my gosh, I can't believe they pulled this off. It looks realistic. You know, look at the pores on his skin, you know, and all that kind of. You're looking at the detail of this stuff, and it feels like there's really some acting going on here. In one of the only other times that this occurred, in my mind, this level of motion capture were the recent Planet of the Apes movies that just really, you know, oh my gosh, a chimp can experience true emotion and I feel it. And this is similar. I think that's the difference. I think I tapped into it right there. There isn't a real, true, hard, evocative emotion to be felt in this movie. It's kind of paper thin. She's an orphan. You should feel bad for her. He, you know, the BFG is bullied. You should feel bad for him. There isn't a whole lot else there. There's some interesting kind of elements of suggestion in the story, the giants are centuries and centuries old. They're immortal beings, you know, and you kind of sit there and wonder, you know, what is the BFG's life like? It must have been lonely. There are some things like that happening, but it just doesn't. As amazing and lifelike as a BFG is, it doesn't come to real life. And I think that's the difference between a movie that moves you and a movie that's a technical exercise. The Adventures of Tintin, I had a similar experience with it.
Sure.
This is Spielberg's previous like animation motion capture thing, where the characters were just like They were either grating and annoying, or like Tintin was just this kind of bland character, and he had this kind of grandiose adventure. And there are instances in Tintin and the BFG where I'm watching this and I'm like, I'm noticing this because I'm a movie geek, you know, he hasn't, there hasn't been an edit in several minutes, you know, action sequence and the camera is moving in marvelous ways. And you're sitting there thinking, you know what, I think this is why Spielberg is working in animation, because it's the kind of thing that I don't know if you could do it with a live action
with a camera,
movie.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if you could do it without an enormous amount of effort, you know. But animation opens the door to anything. The possibilities are endless. You are not limited by the physical world. and so you're watching some of this and you're like, this is really marvelous filmmaking. But what is it more than Spielberg kind of showing off?
Sure.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, kind of being a little indulgent. And I hate to say that, because how many movies do you see where you just... you wish that there was something like that to grab onto, you know, where they get the emotion right, but the filmmaking is just so mediocre and flat that it doesn't pop like that, like you wish it would. And I wish Spielberg would have directed The Jungle Book. Imagine if The Jungle Book had sequences like that.
Sure.
It'd be one of the greatest movies ever. I do think Jungle Book is one of the best movies I've seen this year. So I don't know. I think I really do think that younger kids are going to be bored by the BFG. Prove me wrong. Maybe they'll go into it and they'll be enraptured by it. But
it feels like if your choice is between this and Dory, obvious.
Yeah, it's obvious. You know, Dory has narrative momentum to it that the BFG just doesn't have. There's a propulsive story, and that I don't want to criticize Roald Dahl for not crafting a propulsive story. It's just, this might be an instance where the translation from book to screen doesn't work very well. And BFG has been in development since the early 90s. We're talking 25-ish years. This has been in development. So I wonder if there was just a struggle in, you know, really making this come to life. BFG is 2 hours long. You know, it needs to be 90 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like, I didn't feel like it was padded. I just felt like it was just if you're going to have maximum direction and minimal story, it better be a little leaner and meaner.
Yeah. And I'm one that, given the way that movies have gone in the last 3 years, I feel like you should have a really compelling reason to go past 90, because most do not.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like, well, we made it three. I was just upstairs talking to somebody about the director's cut or extended cut of Batman versus Superman. He's like, oh, it answers all some of the questions that you have. I'm like, yeah, but I got to invest another hour into that insanity.
Is it really 3.5?
It's something crazy like that.
Yeah,
you know, and like, you got to have a really compelling reason to go past 90.
Or you have to have this amazing world. The Lord of the Rings was a world I wanted to see explored in as much depth as possible. You know, The Hobbit less so, because, you know.
But I think that's a good comparison, right? You were all in, and I was all in on Lord of the Rings, however long you wanted to make those three books, right? Whatever you wanted to do. And then, you know, even from the announcement of The Hobbit, we were like, well, it's a single book. How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
Like, all it is camping and singing and dancing. Like, what are you going to do for 9
moaning
hours?
Moaning dwarves.
Right. Like, what are you going to do? And it wasn't as successful, I don't think, because it wasn't as enveloped. And you're seeing, if you compare, and this is not what we do on this podcast, but let's beat a horse to death, right?
Sure.
Like, if you compare Vikings to Game of Thrones, there isn't a comparison.
Yeah.
You know, they both similar sort of storytelling, mm-hmm. but one, you wish it was 327 seasons long.
Yeah.
One, you're like, it's all right. You know, I don't want it to go off the TV, but it's not something that I'm not downloading another app to make sure I don't miss an episode of Vikings, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, in Game of Thrones, an episode will go by, and you're like, God, Bran wasn't in this.
Right.
Damn. I really want to know what's going on with... Yeah, there's a hunger that you've got to... Who is clamoring for a movie about the BFG?
But this fits in. This fits into your thesis for the year, right? These are sequels and things that nobody asked for.
The Jungle Book is the exception, I think, where everybody, at least I was like, Jungle Book, man, how many times are they going to do this? You know, and that one proved me wrong, absolutely. But because there was, the story was still relevant. You know, the story was relevant, and the ideas they had for this were solid, very solid ideas. BFG, I'm so ripped apart by it because it's Spielberg. He's one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. And I liked War Horse better than this, you know? and War Horse is this kind of corny, episodic thing, you know? And I was more engaged in War Horse than this. Maybe because I'm old and cynical and an adult and see more value in a war movie than in a kid's animation. But the discrepancy there is I love Pixar. My son is getting older and he's like starting to enjoy Monsters, Inc. And you're like, I could watch this 100 times, maybe 50. But
right. You'll find the breaking point. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. But like, so I don't think it's that either. There's a great disconnect here. And I didn't hate the BFG, but I wanted to like it so much more than I did. And I felt the same way with the Adventures of Tintin. So there you have it, the BFG. I recommend it with reservations because there's things in this that you go, that is made for a big screen. It should be on a big screen. How about we just... can we just cut it up into like a few sequences and just put it up there because that's how it best functions, and the sequence, the queen farting sequence is expendable. So there you have it. Tickled, go see it, search it out. I imagine movies like this will get some kind of streaming platform sooner or later if it's not. Not in a theater near you. So keep your eyes open for that. Next week, I'm on vacation, man.
Which means I'm going to do this by myself.
Yeah, you're just going to talk to yourself about...
I don't know. I have no idea.
Mike and Dave need wedding dates?
Yes, perhaps.
Well, when I get back, we'll get together, Eric, and we'll catch up on Mike and Dave need wedding dates.
All right.
We might touch on Tarzan, but I also think... Our next podcast, we should focus on the day I come back. You know, it'll be published. Best and worst of the year so far. We're at the halfway point.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. We're going to look back at 2016 and see what the good and the bad are.
We should do two podcasts. We could do one where you do the best, and then there's one where you just hate everything for an entire podcast. Here are all the things that I hate.
Maybe we should.
See?
Maybe we should deploy it that way. You're full of
you've got a whole vacation to think about that, but I think an entire podcast of things that you hate.
Oh, it's going to do gangbusters.
I can smell the Marconi, even though they don't give Marconis for podcasts, but they should.
I can just smell the downloads coming. People are going to love it.
And boy, that smell.
Anyway, we'll see you back in I don't know a week and a half or so. Thanks for tuning in. I am John Serba. I hate your favorite movie. Thanks for joining me, Eric.